This week's guest went from a freelance side hustle to a million-dollar agency in only a few years, and they're telling you all their secrets on this episode. Are you ready? Let's go! What is up, self-maders, and welcome to another episode of the Self-Made Web Designer Podcast. Building something that is now a side hustle into one day being a million-dollar company is kind of the dream, right? It's fun to daydream about what life would look like if you had multiple employees and an office and even an entire HR department. Okay, maybe you don't dream about an HR department, but all of us dream about having outrageous success. Well, Mark Miller and Ted Vaughn of The Historic Agency have found outrageous success in just a few short years. Their first year, they made $6,000. The next year, they made $45,000. And their third year, they made $250,000. And now they're making over $1 million. They can't tell you specifics. At least that's what Mark just told me. All from doing simple things like serving their customers really, really well and finding things that they were good at that other agencies struggled with. And I'm happy to say that they are sharing what they have learned along their journey with you so you too can find that outrageous success that we are all shooting for. Before we dive into the conversation, I want to invite you to subscribe to the Self-Made Web Designer Podcast and get awesome, fresh new episodes straight in your pocket to help you grow as a freelance web designer, web developer, or heck, even as a citizen of Earth. Okay, so go ahead, take a second, and to subscribe on whatever platform you are listening or watching this episode on. All right, are you ready to hear from Mr. Mark Miller and Mr. Ted Vaughn on how to quickly go from a side hustle to a million-dollar agency? Cool, let's do it. Well, Ted and Mark, thank you so much for being on the Self-Made Web Designer Podcast. So good to have you. My second two-person interview in the life of the Self-Made Web Designer Podcast. So thanks for showing up and being here.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Yeah, so to talk a little bit about what you guys do, how you got started. I know you run a really awesome agency here in Phoenix. A little bit of history. Mark and I worked together years and years and years ago at the church that I was a part of for over a decade. And so, he was the first one that I saw doing design. And I was like, man, that guy's amazing. I wish I could do what he does. And even though I've put all the effort into trying to learn how to do what he does, I still don't do it nearly as well. So I'm glad to get your insight.
I'm not sure about that when it comes to web, but you could hold your own still.
So. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. So tell me about y'all's journey.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we each have different stories of kind of how we came into Historic. I had been working largely in nonprofits, including churches, and went out on my own to do coaching and consulting. And, I knew enough about design and logo and web to be dangerous, but not to execute. And time again, I would help clients get clear strategically and think about their brand and their brand strategy. But then the question was, what about logo? What about web? What about this? So I knew Mark, and Mark knew other designers, and I was able to connect to him and they would deliver. And eventually it just became clear, you know, there's a niche here to serve. Let's figure out how to bootstrap an agency and do it. And that's what we did.
Yeah. And much like, I think probably what you talk about, you know, both of us had other gigs that we were working on full time, and we started an agency. And then we woke up and we had, I think, 4 or 5 W-2 employees with healthcare and, all the other HR stuff was starting to have to be formulated around it. And we were like, you know, should we actually work in our own business? That would be nice one day, you know? So it was one of those things where we just, you know, bootstrapped it, for lack of a better term. And I remember one time we actually, the first person we hired was someone to answer the phones and to like interact with the clients on the account management side, because we were doing our other gigs And we needed to show up like real, like a real agency or like a real contractor who wasn't doing too many different things. And so we hired someone to interface with clients during the day. I would take a client call every day at lunch or two, and then on the way into work, and then on the way home. And eventually that just flourished into an agency, and we were able to leave our full-time gigs.
Having talked to a lot of freelancers who have tried to do what you guys have done, that kind of success doesn't happen by accident, right? You don't just start working and contracting on your own and then all of a sudden like, man, we just have way too much business. We got to hire people and build a company.
It actually was the other way around. we started out at the very, very early stages, and this is even probably, I think, Ted, before you came into the picture. I think our first year we made like $6,000, me and one of the other designers, and we were like, cool. That's $6,000. Great. You know, well, we can go backpacking with that, I guess, you know, go to REI, buy some stuff. And then, we were a little bit more intentional about, okay, let's see if we can get more sales. Right. And it's something that people forget about. They think, oh, we just need to work on the thing that we're going to do and do it really well and not focus about sales. But I'm a pragmatist, so I was like, well, let's see if there's actually interest. And then it was $46,000 the next year, and then the next year after that was $250,000, and you're like, whoa.
Well, and I would say that's where the real challenge begins. I think going from a lifestyle brand, a boutique designer or boutique, you know, agency, to really wanting to grow. It's funny because I would always hear organizational specialists talk about, the difference between a $5 million company and a $50 million and a $50 million and a $100 million. And I would just, in my mind, I couldn't fully understand it. Well, now our journey of going from like zero to something, something to more to each one of those phases has had radical learning, major speed bumps, friction that's both personal, professional, because, you know, often when you start something, the people that helped get you to where you are may not in many cases be the right people to get you to that next place. And it can just feel weird, like betrayal. It's just, you know, and I think Mark experienced way more of that than I did, because he was in Arizona doing this thing in a way more tactical way than I was. You know, I was supporting, but not in the weeds like Mark was.
I run the day-to-day operations in our Phoenix office, and Ted lives in San Diego and has chosen never to move to Phoenix because he lives in San Diego, like most people that live in San Diego. And so, I mean, it's great.
I don't think there's a lot of that San Diego to Phoenix movement. I don't see
much. No, it's usually the other way. Right? Yeah. But yeah. And I would say, like, for your listeners who may be like on the solo side of just starting out, making those jumps, whether it's with, sometimes it's not just like, oh, I'm growing and I want to have a team, because that just having a bigger team and bigger office isn't necessarily good, right? It's a different set of problems. But sometimes it's where you want to go. It means, just like some people will get you where you are today, the clients that you have today, the types of clients that you have today, may not get you to where you want to go tomorrow, and you need to serve different types of clients. And that's the same kind of like wrestling with that idea as well. So it's not just the people that you have on your team, it's also the type of clients or service offerings, as an example, that you have as well.
Yeah, I think you've hit on something really key with that, and I think it's something that a lot of freelancers, especially in the early stages, are having to navigate through. And on every one of those jumps, I think from zero to something, something to something more, and then something more to a lot more, right? There's all of these things that you've never done before that you've got to figure out how to do, and you're also leaving things in the past that you're really good at, right? Like, you dialed it in, you mastered that level. And so that's what you know for sure. Like, you could go out and you can get 10 clients that you've gotten who are like the last 10 clients that you got, but now you're going and looking for a different type of client. So talk about that transition, because I'm sure there was a lot of fear. How did you face that fear? Was there strategy involved? Was there a conversation involved?
Yeah, a lot of all of that. I think there's always fear, especially as creative people. We tend to be more on the insecure side for some reason when everyone wants to be us, which makes no sense, but we are. There's actually some interesting research about that. But the thing I think I was struggling with is, okay, so the first part was we were just going to do design, right? And design started to get commoditized immediately, right? And all of your, you know, listeners probably know, right? Like Canva to, you know, Canva, now everyone's a designer, right? My wife has students in her seventh grade class that use Canva better than some people I know use Photoshop. So there's that. And so that first step for us was, okay, what does it look like to be more strategic with our clients, be more full service, adding different offerings? And that was really scary because we didn't know how we were going to deliver those services or if we knew how to do. I mean, I knew how to do marketing, but like it's different between marketing strategy and then running your PPC campaigns and running traditional media and running all this stuff. You need people to actually do that. So we sat down and this was in the early days to figure out, okay, what is that offering going to be? And we felt like we needed a strategic offering that would allow us to speak into the bigger picture and then move in and sell the whatever services we wanted to that the client, after we built trust with them, they were like, okay, yeah, we need a website, or yeah, we need this and whatever was part of your plan, and we'll just hire you to do it because we already know you and we're comfortable with you. So that was a big fear. But we looked at it from a strategic standpoint. What is it that we need to be able to do that? Not from a people standpoint necessarily, but like how are you going to convince the client, right? And that's where I think we're a little bit more process oriented than traditional agencies, is that, okay, what is it going to get to have that conversation with the client? What is the offering? What is the process that we're going to walk them through that builds that trust that lets us do something else? And then we'll figure out how to do that something else once they say yes. And so that's kind of the first iteration of that. And I think the next evolution of where Historic is at is in this journey of discovering, okay, what is it that we do super uniquely and really, really good that no one else does, like that unfair advantage or the onlyness or uniqueness, whatever language you want to use to describe that. And so we're kind of in this place of trying to find our voice, which has led to a new book about how we approach brand and some other things. But Ted, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I will. I think it's interesting because as you were sharing earlier, Chris, about you feel like you've got everything dialed in and you're in the sweet spot, then you have to kind of, I feel like for me, this journey has been more of like tripping and stumbling my way forward and learning as I go. And oftentimes having intuitive guts, being smart enough and courageous enough to figure out how to serve a client when really, if we're being honest, I had no effing clue how to actually do it because it felt like the first time. But each time we served our clients, especially in the areas of brand that are more about culture and strategy, maybe the higher part of the funnel. You know, when you get into design, I think it's a little bit more narrow and specific, but I think the stuff I was dealing with was more, you know, I would say every client is this unique amalgamation of culture and conviction and context, and like there's no cut and paste. And now I know that's true as an artist and in design, but it's also true in how we approach all of our brand solutions. So I think one of the things I felt, and maybe a lot of your listeners feel like, is I don't know that I ever get to a place where it's so perfectly honed we can just now repeat this thing and do it again and again and again. This is not about scale of a narrow thing. This is about, for us, charging enough to do the work before, during, and after that actually serves the client well and getting paid for it, when everything about the client's world is getting commoditized. So they want to commoditize you. They want to grind you. And really what they need is a partner more than they need a logo. What they need is somebody to walk with them. So I think in many ways, what we've found is our greatest attribute is the strategic advising and partnership with our clients, all the deliverables that come on the back end of that are that much more trusted and wanted and needed and helpful and frankly efficient. But if you get the partnership or the trust piece wrong, then you're just a commodity and they're better served going elsewhere.
You guys both hit on how you really kind of found your sweet spot, and a lot of different marketers call it a lot of different things. Your secret sauce, there's your tilt is the latest one that I've heard, how you're going to tilt yourself to serve your client. And you guys kind of found it with culture and with strategy and kind of a top down, I guess strategy from looking at, you know, who are you guys? What are you trying to accomplish? And then going from there and then giving them something that serves them best. So did that realization come from the get go? Did you discover it as you go along? Cause there's a lot of people listening who are like, how do I find that sweet spot for myself, that onlyness or that uniqueness about me that really allows me to stand out and serve higher paying clients?
I think Mark might have a different answer. I think we always knew what it was. We didn't know how to monetize it. So what opened doors and closed deals was what we're actually writing about and talking about and now getting paid to do. But it took a long time to actually, it's like we'd spent all this energy consulting for free, asking great questions, getting to know them, to get a design contract that was essentially chasing a deliverable. And it was like, either we're going to be a creative agency and become this incredible, all about our creativity, right? And it's like, hire the unicorn, be this incredible, whatever it is, but be about creativity, or we're going to be about process and strategy. And like, yes, we do design. Yes, we love creativity. Yes, we love digital, but those all come on the back end of what we're going to be differentiated by. And I think we always knew what we were best at. I just don't think we had a clue how to monetize it in the early years. Is that fair, Mark? Do you agree with that?
Yeah. For your listeners, I would say, you know, you probably know, and if you can't, you can ask, but why are people coming to you? And sometimes we actually don't pay attention to that. We think it's nice and we're so focused on, I need to build these awesome, sick websites, or I need to learn the latest, as if it's Elementor or Webflow or whatever the thing is that you do. Or, you know, I need to get more efficient in Figma and blah, 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 blah. And we miss this thing. And so the two things people came to, why people came to us and why people stayed, as far as clients were concerned, is our strategy and how we felt like we could walk them through a process, and then we became partners. And they were more successful because of it. And two, because of the way we treated our clients is why they would stay, right? So those two things. In fact, I just had a big client in Atlanta tell us they fired all of the other agencies that they work with because no one treats them the way we do. And I'm like, all we do is we're nice and we over-communicate. That's the only two things. Like, we're polite. I don't want to say on there. Yeah. But it was just, you know, so you kind of know like why people are sticking around or why they're coming to you. I mean, it might be hard in the first days, but when you start getting clients, pay attention to that stuff, because if there's a way to harness that through your messaging, through your product offering or service offering, and how you sell, then you're going to start finding your uniqueness in that, or your tilts or whatever it is.
Well, it's so simple, but I think so many people don't just think to ask, why did you hire me over the other people that you were interviewing or talking to? You know, like there's some thought in our minds of like, I've got to figure this out on my own, and nobody's going to tell me what their playbook is or why they're making the decisions. But it like, I found that to be true as well. It's really much more simple than that. You can't pretend like you know something that you don't know when it comes to getting hired or finding the right client. Like, you've just got to go out on a limb and kind of ask and see what happens.
I also think you have to ask the question, are we truly doing this to be a lifestyle brand, or do we actually want to grow and scale? And if we want to grow and scale, what does that look like? Because you can grow and scale and still kind of be a lifestyle brand. There are modest trade-offs, but if you want to grow and scale to certain levels, there are huge trade-offs, and you can't. What I learned is we went into that naive to what the consequences might be. And then we realized it as they were biting us in the ass. And maybe that's the way it is. Maybe there's no way around
that's how you learn. If you're like a, you know, more creative, you know, outside, whether it's design or something, you can still niche down and find your uniqueness in that, right? I don't know if you've had Corey Miller on the show, Chris, but I'll introduce you to him if you don't. But he's, you know, he's a great illustrator here in town. And his niche, he really found his niche in working with microbrews. Like he illustrates these great patches for the different national parks and different things, but then found a niche in working with microbrews, designing really awesome cans. And, you know, you don't need to go upstream necessarily if you want to be one man shop like him and just kill it. And just everyone comes to you if they want a really awesome can design, that's totally fine. But again, ask why people are coming to you and what that is. But yeah, there are different challenges that you're going to face, whether it's that versus I want to grow and have 10 people or 20 people in my shop. There's another set of problems.
You guys mentioned something, both of you kind of touched on this, that I think is really important. And, you know, a lot of folks who are just getting started, they might not have caught it, but I think it's super impactful. It's the idea that you're getting hired to, you know, check off a task list versus being hired to be a consultant and a strategist. And you also have these deliverables that you got to do, right? Like they need something, you know, whether it's a logo or a branding package or website or, you know, marketing campaign for some new product or something they're launching. But at the core of that is the why behind the what, which is, you know, figuring out how to be successful or, you know, trying to accomplish something that they have that deeper level motivation for. So talk a little bit about that. Like, was that a natural assumption? Like, did you always know we're never going to be the task list driven folks, or did you find that as you went along? And then how did you make that more of the focus?
Yeah, I think we stumbled into that a little bit because we've always wanted to serve the client well, which meant we never like had a unique style necessarily, if that makes sense. Like if you're a designer or an illustrator or you do web designs and you could even in web design, you can have kind of like a niche. We never really had a visual niche and we just wanted to serve the client well. So we were actually really good at becoming a Swiss Army knife for that client. And I think that led, you know, Ted, you want to talk about how that just led into the natural conversation of like, what does it actually mean to serve them well? And where do we see the gaps that clients are facing?
Yeah. I mean, I think going back to something we were saying earlier, you know, what we were really good at was asking questions that revealed certain things that we didn't know how to serve beyond revealing, but it built trust. And then it led to a design contract. I think when Mark says we backed into it, I think what we backed into was realizing, you know, what we're actually really good at and helping our people see, we actually, as an agency, aren't designed to do. So we have to change that. But I also think to your question, Chris, I think it's safe to assume that most of the time, the clients that you're serving, that any of your listeners are serving, don't actually know what they need. They think that they need something that is the tip of the iceberg when there's probably the rest of the iceberg below the water that you need to somehow address or at minimum talk about in order to serve them well in design. But if you don't at least address the whole iceberg, then you're guilty of just helping them chase cool. And that doesn't actually help further most causes unless the cause and the mission is to chase cool. And then great, we'll do that for 6 months and we'll have to do it again. So, you know, I think to a certain extent, the assumption I have is every client we're talking with doesn't actually know the full extent of what they need. And our job and opportunity is to help them see it and then be prepared to serve them in it if we can.
I think we could just end the show off that note. That's incredible advice. And I think very insightful. But before we do, you guys just released a new book. It's really awesome. So I'd love it. And it, you know, you kind of mentioned it. It's talking about culture and brand and the connection between the two. So talk a little bit about that and what you guys are doing with that.
Yeah. So it's called Culture Built My Brand. It releases October 19th. So depending on when this episode airs, and we in we came to this again, this is one of those other things that you just start paying attention to the patterns around you and the work that you're doing, you can really offer some great value. And for us, it was seeing how there is a pattern among clients we were working with that a rebrand would bomb horribly, no matter how great the strategy was or how great the creative or how awesome the website. I mean, sometimes we do entire packages and they would never see the light of day after a board would approve them. And then others would be super successful, like, you know, 10x the value of what they paid, or 100x or 1000x the value. And we're figuring out, why are there these two things? And we came to the realization is that the internal organizational culture had more to do with whether or not a project was going to be successful or the brand was going to be successful than the actual brand work, right? And so we've all probably been a part of an organization where it's really difficult. There's backbiting or, you know, backstabbing or whatever. It's governed by politics. You don't actually really know what is important, all those things. And so we found patterns, and those patterns we call six layers of marquee culture. So marquee being the big sign outside of a movie theater or a theater that draws people in. And we found those six things being principles, which are the behavior. When you can articulate what the behavior is that lines up with your values and your brand, then employees are going to actually work on the things that need to be worked on to grow your organization and to deliver for your customers. Architecture, which is internal structures and systems. You know, if you say you're people-centered, but your expense report is done in SharePoint and it takes like 4 hours, no one's going to really care about people anymore after that experience. Rituals, which we have really great examples of, like the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory and how they create a ritual through their pumpkin carving contest every year to show creativity and engineering. Lore, which is the stories that people tell about organizations, whether they're good or bad. Every organization has a story, and that impacts the way people operate and execute on the brand. Vocabulary, custom words that, again, point back to these values. And then artifacts, which are the physical manifestations of your brand. That could be office space to, you know, swag items or reminders. Like IBM gives all their field consultants a design thinking notebook that has all the tools that they can use with a client. And that's just a great artifact to point back to their value in helping solve problems for clients. So we noticed that the ones who do these six things really well had rebrands that were super successful. And the ones that had problems, misalignments, confusion, one thing didn't match the other thing, it would fall apart. So we're super excited about the book. I think it can help, you know, as for your specifically for your listeners, as they're working with other clients, how they can look at these six layers and identify, you know, either opportunities to speak in and deepen the relationship to make sure their pitches go well and they can sell more work, or even to offer, like, if you buy the book, we have all the tools that we use as an agency available to anyone who buys the book. So you'll be able to download the actual, like, worksheets we use with our clients in defining some of this stuff so that they can live out an aligned brand in their organization and really flourish and win more customers, as we say in the book.
You know, if you're listening to this and you have zero interest in culture because it just feels way beyond your scope, what we have found is, even when we were just doing design and web, we served our clients better when, at minimum, we asked questions that probed and pulled out of the client questions and understanding around culture. And that inspires the client to understand that you're actually taking time to know them, be a student of theirs, and that informs the design. So my hope would be that this book serves to give a whole new quiver of arrows to people who do just design work but can do it better because they're asking questions and potentially expanding scopes of work, because we're providing ways to translate that design into collateral, swag, physical. There's a lot of ways that your design can further culture, which opens opportunities for work and selling new things. So I think it's going to be a really helpful book for anyone in our world for that reason.
Yeah. And I, to piggyback on Ted real quick, just that even if you're doing web or product design or something, it will help you understand what is going to be long-term successful for the client, understanding their culture versus, hey, we built this really cool website, but you can't edit it at all. So good luck. And here's the keys, you know, and then realizing their culture values that more than they value something else. Right. And so that's going to make you a better long-term partner.
Well, I really appreciate you guys being on the podcast. If somebody are trying to connect with you or somebody's trying to find the book, where would they go?
Yeah. So the book is available on Amazon and everywhere books are sold, but you can also check out culturebuiltmybrand.com to grab a free chapter and download the tools that we use here at Historic Agency. And you can also check out historicagency.com to learn more about our organization. And you can follow me on LinkedIn. Just, I guess, search Mark Miller. I think it's Mark Michael Miller, maybe. I'm not
there
sure.
There has to be LinkedIn a lot of Mark Millers on
yeah,
LinkedIn.
That's
yeah, that's what I was just going to say. Like, Mark Miller is not probably.
I'm easy. I'm just.
But you can look up Ted. Ted Vaughn has a.
Yeah, TEDVAUGHN at all of them, except TikTok. Yeah. I haven't quite gotten my dance videos ready for prime time.
Yeah. You start invading on your daughter's face, she's going to be upset. So,
yeah, for
yes.
sure.
That's amazing. Well, I know for sure we're going to have you guys on again and just pick your brains on everything that you know as you've built an awesome agency, but really appreciate you being on the show and hope the launch of the book is successful.
Yeah. Thanks Chris. Really appreciate it. It's fun.
Whew, were you taking notes? There were such awesome tips and insights about building a successful agency from the ground up. I love the idea that what makes you unique as a freelancer or web designer, developer, or whatever is going to show up eventually as long as you're paying attention. So think about or even ask why clients are coming to you rather than going to someone else. Why are they hiring you versus your competition? And notice the ways that you're really able to help clients and move the needle forward in their business. And then once you figure those things out, start really leaning into them. Hey, if you want to know more about Mark and Ted, visit culturebuiltmybrand.com. You can download a free chapter from their book that launches October 19th, 2021. So it's going to be awesome. I'm going to be one of the first persons to read it, and I hope that you read it with me. And if you'd like a transcript of this episode, there will be a link in the show notes that will take you to this episode's web page. I can't wait to hang out with you again next Wednesday when another episode is dropping. It's like a party every single week, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Until then, keep going, and don't forget, if you don't quit, you quit.